Session number 104-20, rule 31.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 31. You were telling me about telltale giveaway signs in the desert.
Yes. As I think I have mentioned, I told you that ships at sea were not allowed to clean their boilers out during the daytime because of the smoke. Well, in the desert, you could see nothing but the desert stretching far and wide around you, but suddenly you would see a column of sand rising up into the sky, and you realized then that there was a vehicle or more than one vehicle of either the enemy or your own troops a long way off. You wouldn't be able to see the vehicles, but you clearly saw the column of sand rising into the sky. Well, our column, which I've been talking about, was out for about from the 30th of March, in fact, according to my notes, to the 6th of April. And the Germans reacted, and they came out in considerable force, and armored cars. And we did, in fact, have to stand to in the line because they thought that we might get attacked. Well, the next column that went out was commanded by a man called Major Ross McLaren, and of the 8th Battalion, and it was provided by the 8th Battalion, and unhappily it was pinned to the ground by German armored cars, and they shot up all the soft vehicles, or almost all the soft vehicles, of the column, and therefore the column was immobile. And Ross McLaren, who was a well-known Durham pigger in the coal fields, was taken prisoner. It was a complete debarque. I think there weren't armored cars, they were tanks. They were about 18 or 19 German tanks just surrounded the whole column. Well, some vehicles did a bunk, got out, dashed away from the column, and the divisional commander decided that one officer, one sergeant, one driver would all be court-martialed for cowardice. And the officer was a fellow called Kalafa, and I can't remember now who the sergeant was, and or who the driver was. All I do know was that I was called upon by Turton, Lord Tranmere now, I think, who was the DAAG of the division, to take the summary of the evidence of the prosecution. The Deputy Judge Advocate General was a solicitor from Norwich, an extraordinary nice chap, and he and I both had the same view, that this really wasn't a question of cowardice, it was a question of inexperience. And I was very worried, although it was no concern of mine, that they might let the officer off, but not the sergeant and the driver. And I think the Judge Advocate General was really of the same mind. However, I wasted a lot of time hanging about division headquarters after I'd taken the taken the summaries of the evidence, and I had to appear before the court and confirm that I had taken all this evidence. And I believe that, if I remember rightly, the officer got off. I only hope that that the other two did, the sergeant and the driver. But it was a most fearful debacle.
How did they make the choice? Was he the only officer in the breakaway group?
Well, he was called Kaliofer, Kaliofer, I remember. And I suppose the powers that be, the general, the division, had selected these three people. But most of the column was completely wiped out. Well, taken prisoner. That was the Ross McLaren, who was such a nice chap, was taken prisoner.
And the evidence, would that come from the other members of the breakaway group that
yes.
provide the evidence?
Yes.
Which rather seems strange in a way, that the people who were involved in it were providing evidence for the three who had in effect been selected
yes.
to stand trial.
Well, what... I can't, I've no notes, so can't remember. But the fact remained, I was occupied for about 6 days and a week, taking the summary and hanging about waiting to give evidence at the court-martial divisional headquarters. But it was a complete disaster. The 74th Three Regiment lost six guns. Six 25-pounders. The whole thing was a debacle.
Can I just ask one or two more questions about the columns? Did you move out from your positions at night, from the main position, to take up a position in the desert so that you...
No, not necessary. No, you see, the Germans, until they'd been irritated, weren't there. I mean, quite clearly, we'd stirred up a hornet's nest in our column. And then the 8th had to do the next. And the Germans had sent some tanks out to see what was going on. And lo and behold, met Ross McLaren's column. And they would certainly shoot up the soft stuff first, i.e. the vehicles that pull the guns. And three tunnels that carried the infantry.
Was there some kind of rota for taking your turn in a column within your...
In the brigade, yes. You see, we did one, then the 6th did one. And later on, I'm going to come to one that I actually took out myself. Just towards the end of the whole operation, the whole of the Gazala line, yes. So, anyhow, by the 24th of April, the whole of this rather unpleasant incident was over. Now, just go back to life in the box. We had our padre was there. And he used to take early morning services at Holy Communion, but for about 8 or 9 people who wanted to come, and they were always held in vehicle pits. Now, all the vehicles we had had to be driven into pits, soaking pits, so that the engine was below ground. You could never have a parade service. You just could have these little services which he took all round the company from time to time, companies in the battalion area. And I well remember going to one. There were about 6 or 8 of us there. And it was... He said, make your confession to Almighty God, meekly kneeling on your knees, he should have said. But he said, he left off, make your confession to Almighty God, and left it there, because had we knelt down on the razor-sharp rock at the bottom, we'd have cut our knees to pieces. And I always remember that. I remember, too, the battalion cobbler was also there, and he was one of my Teesdale regulars from here, and Wilson, George Wilson, and he was there, too, at that service. Well, that was the sort of life one led in the box. Now, we had a chap called Maurice Kirby, who I think in civil life was a builder. And he made me a hole in the ground deep enough so I could put a camp bed on in it. And the sides of the dugout were covered with white camouflage netting, rather like lace. And it looked very attractive inside, and I could get into my bed there quite happily and comfortable. And I tore out a picture out of an Illustrated London News of one of the famous Dutch artists, Peter Bruegel's pictures, and it was of an ice snow scene somewhere in Holland. And I hung it up on the side of my bunk. Over the bunk, of course, would be a bit of a tent. Our company officer's mess had four armchairs made out of sandbags and a table made out of sandbag, and it too had camouflage netting, this sort of lace camouflage netting. And so all the officers' accommodations and the were fairly comfortable, considering we were in the desert. And too early in the mornings, too, there were a lot of birds. It was in the spring, of course, and you had quite a bird chorus. My tent, there'd be heavy dews, you see, at night. My tent, on one occasion, provided water, a drop of water for a lark that landed on top. It wanted a drink, and there it was. Get a drink out of the canvas tentage on the top. But there were desert wheat ears and different kinds of lizards and all making, and desert rats, the famous desert rats, as well as the ordinary rat of a kind, desert rat. And they were all beginning to nest, you see, at this time of the year.
What was your biggest pest?
Pest? Oh, but it started flies, of course. They became fearful. But there was a thing called a crite, which was a small snake about a foot or so long, 15 inches long, and it was deadly poisonous. I was going round one night, my positions in the line, one night with my servant. You always, if you went anywhere at any time of the day or night, should take somebody with you. In case anything happened to you, he could get back and tell you, tell the others what had happened to you. Anyhow, I was going round one night, and it was just dusk, and he spotted a crite just in front of me, and he brought his rifle down and killed otherwise I'd probably trodden on it and killed it.
Was there many injuries of that kind caused by...
No, not a lot. Not a vast number, but you could always find them. And then, of course, there were scorpions. You wanted to be careful when you put your boot on in the morning because there wasn't a scorpion inside. Otherwise, you'd get a very nasty sting. But that was the sort of life. There were tortoises, too, I remember. Tortoises, and it became extremely hot. Well, that then was the roughly the life in the Gazala line.
What about food? and cookhouse facilities, where, how were they inside the box?
Oh, yes. So food came up from Bierschlong, 15 miles, with a water tank. We were allotted a gallon of water per day, and half of that was supposed to go to the cookhouse. A water tanker would come up. Out with that half gallon you had to wash with and shave. And your servant kept the water and for some time, and he would store each day's water that you'd used, and then he'd put it through a sand filter, and he'd use it again to wash your clothes with. Mind, there wasn't meant much. Your clothes weren't more than just perhaps a vest and a pair of pants and a shirt and some socks. But that's all you wore in hose tops. So there wasn't a great deal of washing to do. But you had to be careful, certainly there.
What was the food like, Colonel?
The food was good, really. I mean, throughout the war, I don't think we ever had... We had hardtack and bully, but this was all hot. We would have a hot meal provided by the company cooks. Each company had its own cooks who were pretty good at it.
And the men's positions, how comfortable were they in this situation? Were they sleeping where they dug?
They were below ground, too. They sleep below ground. But somebody was always on duty.
And I think you mentioned you dug alternative positions. These were
yes,
the
just in case any position was overrun. If there was a siege, you might say, they could go somewhere else. If there was an attack from one side, they could move over there and deal with those positions. Occupy those positions.
And within the box, you would have certain platoons on duty.
Yes.
At the edge of the box?
At the edge of the box.
With others relaxing deeper
yes.
in. Was that the
and
idea?
Then you had to have alternate positions to... On the back side, you see, they might not be occupied, but had the Germans had come round the back side, which they would have done eventually if we hadn't escaped, they'd have had to be occupied. So we had to make positions there too.
What were your responsibilities as company commander within your own particular...
I had a particular area which I had to see was properly manned the whole time. And then, of course, my whole company had to get up and go out on this jock column. And then it would my position, company position, would have been occupied by the reserve company.
So that when you went out, the reserve company moved in?
They would move in.
What about latrines and toilets?
Oh, you had those. Yes, you had to have those. They were dug down, and we had a sanitary corporal who was responsible for all that sort of thing. Gibson, he was. Another of my Teesdale regulars out of the town here.
And were these moved from time to time?
Yes. You see, so there wasn't much power time. You were either getting ready for this or getting ready for that or doing this or doing that the whole time.
What was the health of the
good.
Men like? It was
good.
Good.
Yes. Well, throughout the whole of my time in the desert, the health was extremely good and the men kept extremely clean. But as I say, there were 5 cases of scabies down at Bierschlong when I did my stint there. And I think it was simply because of the lack of care and attention. Probably because the doctor had not been able to David Joy, the doctor, had not been there, able to get down there, or he'd been too busy. But he carried out his inspections, of course.
And there'd be a strict routine of hygiene, was
yes,
there?
Yes, yes.
Which every man would
very nearly, I think he inspected them nearly every week, all the chaps.
Was there any particular illness which seemed to reoccur?
No. We'd got over all question of drippy tummies, and that's what we'd had when we first arrived. We were really becoming now pretty hardened desert warriors.
What about discipline? Was there
very good. No, never had any trouble.
And leave? Was there any leave from the
there was no leave. No,
so as long as you were in the Gazala line, there was no...
There was no leave at all. You could go down, perhaps one or two chaps might be sent down to BS on merit to have a bathe. I can't remember now offhand when it was. I have a feeling it was in the Gazala line, but it may not have been. But a mobile bath unit came up to us, and... it was, I think it was why we were in the Gazala line. Anyhow, nearly all the chaps were able to get a shower bath. Now, this famous mobile bath unit, you were allowed 3 minutes under the shower. And the chap who ran it, one of the warriors who ran it, would shout 2.5 minutes. And probably then, before you could say Jack Robinson, he'd switched it off. And you were all covered in soap suds. But I did manage to do it once. And I cannot remember where it was, but I think it was at BS on. But when the time came for them to get out of the Gazala line, the officer commanding, who was a Welsh guardsman, actually got an MC for his gallantry in getting his mobile bath unit out of the battle. But I did go there once and have a bath, and I was warned that after 2.5 minutes you had to be jolly careful. That last half minute went very quickly indeed when you were covered in soap suds.
What about mail and communication?
Oh, it all came up. Now, I'll come to it later. When the things were extremely bad, almost the day before, two or three days before, rations and mail came up then to us in the line. And of course the water tanker came up. We buried water. We had water buried in cans.
And boredom wasn't a great
problem?
No,
because you were occupied. There were things to do the whole time. For instance... during the course of my our stay there, I went for 4 days, for a 4 day stay with the 44th Royal Tank Regiment to see how they worked tanks. And they were extremely good. And it was very interesting. From time to time, the whole time, they were dealing with some. The likes of me and others. I enjoyed that 4 days with the 44th Royal Tank Regiment. I remember the second in command was a chap called Alan Brown, and I always remembered this. He went to Eastbourne College as part of his education, and he took part in a guard of honour for the king. I suppose it would be George the VI. And two of the boys fainted before the monarch arrived. And the monarch actually counted them. I mean, Alan Brown, I remember telling me this, and said, "You've only got 98 on parade when you should have 100. And Alan Brown, I remember that ever since he told me. And he said that after Eastbourne he'd joined the army, some regiment or other, and done 8 years and reached the high rank of Lance Corporal. And here he was, second in command of the 44th Attack Regiment. He was such a nice chap. And I spent 4 days there. I think it was 3 days I was there.
And was this to work with the tanks?
Yes, so you've got a working knowledge with the tanks.
What tanks did they have, Colonel, do you recall?
No, I can't remember now. They wouldn't be the Valentines or something like that, some of the very early tanks. They weren't the Americans. They hadn't arrived. Anyhow, things began to hot up towards the middle and end of May. We were warned on the 19th of May, I think it was, or thereabouts, that the Germans might attack. But it never materialized. But anyhow, it was said by a reliable source. And the result was that there was a bit of a flap on. By now, I was acting as a second in command. Jackson had gone to the 8th Battalion to take over, and I was warned that I would have to take out a half column. That would be one company only, half of what the CO had taken out. And the gap guards were warned, just in case the Germans were going to attack, and there was a certain amount of shell fire from our guns onto the German positions, which were now closing in. And there were some dive bombers came over and dive bombed the South Africans. And one was shot down by our chaps, by our Northumberland Hussars in our lines. But you felt that there was something, was the whole thing was hotting up.
Previous to this, had there been much air activity?
A certain amount, yes. But not on us.